Okay, so I am Carrie Perez. I'm a mother of four children, and we currently live in the Phoenix, Arizona area. And I have two children that are on the autism spectrum. And about, Eden is my oldest. She's nine, and Josiah is my six-year-old. And they are the two that are on the spectrum. So I was pregnant with Eden. She was my first pregnancy, my first child, and it was a really good pregnancy. I worked in the ER, and it went really smooth. The day that I went in to give birth to her, it was a really long labor. It was about 28 hours, and I remember I kept telling the doctor that she was sideways. But after about 28 hours, I was taken into a C-section, and she came out, and she was fine. But right away, we noticed some latching difficulties with her, and I had to have a nurse help me, and my husband helped me feed her. And I was a new mom, so I was a little frustrated and confused myself. But we took her home, and we noticed a couple little things, like she didn't like her hair. She had this beautiful head of hair. She didn't like her hair to be touched. And so it didn't really make us think anything, but it was about 15 to 18 months old. We had had our second child, and we were under this, it was kind of like a birth through five program that the state has. And we had a woman that was, she was having visitations with my second child. And she kept asking us questions like, do you notice that Eden doesn't give eye contact? She doesn't respond to her name. She's not talking. And so I have a nephew that was diagnosed with autism. And I thought to myself, you know, this kind of stuff doesn't run in families. How does this happen? Like, yeah, right. But nonetheless, we took her in to her doctor, and they said, yeah, they noticed it too. Another thing we were having a problem with is that Eden wasn't a really great eater, and so she was really small and very much underweight. And so we ended up at a GI doctor. She was borderline failure to thrive, but we were able to get her through that. She came... the doctor said that there were some problems. And so just over her first 3 years of life, we really wanted to give her a chance. We didn't want to throw a diagnosis on her. And so we gave her about 3 years, and it was at that three-year mark that she still was not speaking. And so she went in for testing, and she was, in fact, given a diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder. She went into some early intervention preschools, and so it was about this time I was getting ready to have, I think she was in kindergarten. I had a son, my son Josiah, and he was going in for his two-year-old shots, and we took him in, and we also gave him a haircut, and Josiah was really on cue with everything. He was walking and talking early. He was a good eater. We didn't see any signs of anything, and so when we took him in, we did his well child check, got his shots, and cut his hair. It was literally the next day. It was like his verbal abilities, his speech, you know, dropped off. His sleeping habits were poor. He didn't want to be touched. He wasn't eating very well. And so, again, with him, we really wanted to give him a shot because kids sometimes, you know, they just develop at different stages. And so, again, it was at, like, 3 years old. He just wasn't speaking. And so we took him in, and we had him evaluated, and he came out with a diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder. And so just those were the diagnoses that we were given. Oh, and he we took the two of my children for further evaluation up in Flagstaff, which is a neighboring city. And we had them go through some testing with speech and physical therapy, occupational therapy, and a behavioral type assessment from the pediatrician. And they were still under this autism spectrum diagnosis. Eden was diagnosed with intellectual impairment, which is pretty much a politically correct way now of calling saying that somebody has like mental retardation. So it was a mild intellectual impairment. And Josiah was, we noticed that he ate a lot of non-food items. He was mouthing things. There were certain mannerisms and mechanics that both of my kids had displayed, but he also had a diagnosis of sensory processing disorder. And so we had placed Eden in an early intervention preschool. So this is kind of backing up again a couple years. She was nonverbal, and so she would come home with bite marks. The school wasn't telling us things. There were some really big security issues that we had. And so being the mom that I am, we weren't comfortable with it. So we ended up pulling my child out of school, and we ended up putting her – we tried to homeschool. Both her and then my daughter, Eliana, who's a year behind, and I started Josiah as well. During this time, it was really hard for me to get her to understand ABCs and 1-2-3s. And now I have a medical background, so I could teach her anatomy and physiology, but it takes some real skill to teach a child the basics. My neighbor at the time, who we called him the nosy neighbor, but God bless him for being so nosy. He had alerted me to something that we have here called the Empowerment Scholarship Account. And what it was is that we were able to kind of intercept the funding that would go to the public school system for my daughter, and we were able to utilize that for special, you know, school or homeschool or tutors and other therapies and extracurricular activities. And so since we had some security issues in the public school system, we applied for that and we were granted it. Now, mind you, my child had been, you know, labeled as a child that was never going to be above like a fourth to a sixth grade reading level. Both of them, you know, could possibly be dependent on us the rest of their lives. And so we ended up putting her in a private Christian school here, where the setting was, you know, smaller classroom sizes, and she really began to thrive. She was reading, writing, she was understanding mathematical equations, and so we saw some huge growth in her. You know, during this time, because my husband and I are really big advocates for our children, we believe that, you know, we need to be good stewards over them, and that, you know, if something is wrong, we adapt, accommodate, and we overcome. And, you know, we don't want to put our kids inside a box. And just because somebody has a diagnosis of, you know, autism spectrum disorder, or if they have cerebral palsy or whatever the case was, it doesn't, you know, take away from the fact that they're, you know, our child, they're worthy, and they're special to us. And so we fight for our kids. And I, you know, it was during this time that I had kind of become aware of something that was going on internationally that I had gotten involved in, and it was the Charlie Gard case. It was a young boy that he was not allowed to come over to the U.S. for care, and I thought that maybe this was just an isolated event, and so I kind of read up on it, and I jumped on with them to advocate for this child. And it was really at this time that I grew, you know, not only as a mom, but just as an advocate for my kids and for other kids as well. And so I know that, some of the things that I've been involved in is just kind of other organizations. I've taken a liking, I guess you could say, to children with special needs, parents who have medically vulnerable children. And that really kind of sparked from having kids under the umbrella of special needs myself. And so I was able to eventually get plugged into Simon's Law organization. And my kids have been really big advocates. I think, you know, see from mom and from dad, and they've been learning as well to be, you know, advocates themselves. And so I was really seeing kind of a different aspect of special needs. And so where I was fighting for my child's education, I was fighting to get her good, or Josiah as well, but getting them both, you know, good schooling, good therapy. There are other parents across the U.S. who are just flat out being denied life for their children. And so it was through Simon's Law, I ended up, Cheryl Crozier was Simon's mom, and she asked me to kind of jump on board with her because the Lord gave me a big mouth, and, you know, I was on social media. And so we collaborated together, and I was helping her run the Forum of Simon's Law, and it had already been passed in Kansas. But, you know, I was just hearing all these stories of kids that either had, like, genetic abnormalities, or if they had some sort of traumatic injury, you know, brain injury, or if they had, you know, a sickness like cancer, that doctors across the U.S., hospitals, they carry these futility policies, which basically gives the doctors the ability to say any kind of care for a child, they can, you know, if it's a chromosome abnormality, like if the child has trisomy 18, you'll never be able to correct that problem. And so any kind of care outside of that is futile. And so in essence, they are withholding, they're saying it's unethical for them to treat a child, you know, to which there's no cure for. And so it becomes futile care. And they are denying life-sustaining measures. They're, you know, secret do-not-resuscitate orders. They're withholding hydration, nutrition, medication, transfers to other facilities that would take care of kids. You know, so I really grew this fire in me. And we have been able to, through Simon's Law, we've been able to pass the law through, so it was in Kansas. South Dakota went next. Arizona, which was my state, went third, and then Missouri is fourth. We have some other organizations, we have other states that have jumped on board. And what Simon's Law is that it's a law that says, and it's kind of covering up these loopholes in states, but it's a law that says that a doctor has to have a conversation with a parent of a minor child about do not resuscitate orders, and that this conversation that they have is a documented conversation, and it's also signed and attested to by a witness. And this is, you know, so these parents are able to communicate to physicians, you know, what their needs, wants, and desires are. Now, mind you, doctors still can, under, you know, futility policies, they can still come in and deny care to your child, but this is really a law that is giving parents legal recourse to come back. And we're hoping that as we're educating, you know, moms and dads and the public, that they'll recognize this and that doctors will recognize that parents know this, and they'll kind of check themselves at the door. They don't want to, you know, they carry malpractice insurance and they carry medical licenses. And so we're hoping it stops them at the door. Through Simon's Law organization, we have been able to, it's really in the last year, Simon's Law has really just grown across the nation. It's people are really becoming aware of us. They're becoming aware of what's happening in our nation. And we've been really blessed to partner up with other wonderful organizations, such as the Terry Schiavo Life and Hope Network. There's another organization Terry Schiavo Life and Hope is with Bobby Schindler, and he is an amazing advocate, him and his organization. And they really help in the way of people that are being denied you know, life-saving treatment, or people that come in with these brain injuries and doctors are, you know, in a week saying, oh, you're brain dead, and then they're pulling plugs on people. Another organization is called Life Legal Defense Foundation, and this is a legal organization that comes in and helps on the, you know, with the legal aspects that come into play when parents say no and hospitals say yes, and then you have to get attorneys and courts and stuff involved. There's also just been an amazing amount of parents that are coming out of the woodworks, and we're really finding, too, that, you know, something else that is happening in our nation is that kids, you know, these parents that, you know, mom is pregnant and they have these children that are born early. So they're born between 22 to 25 weeks. They're called micropreemies. These are wanted pregnancies. And for whatever reason, mom has to deliver early. And doctors are saying, no, they're not going to provide any kind of life-sustaining treatment, you know, any kind of ventilation, CPR, medications. And these children are coming out born alive, and they're crying, and they're waving their arms. And these parents have to hold their babies in order, or not in order, but they're holding their children until they draw their last breath. And so, you know, we have goals in mind. One of the things is that we really, Simon's Law really wants to become a 501c3, 501c4, to be able to, you know, help more in depth with these families. And so, you know, I'm just really grateful that you never want to wish anything on your child, but I always say that God has a purpose in everything. And it was through my kids and through the, you know, the characters and qualities that God has given me that I, you know, a couple years back was able to see what was going on, advocate for my own babies, and then really just see the need. And, you know, there's God has given me a purpose, and I love that, you know, he has called me to advocate. I love the fact that I have an amazing husband that is behind it. I have my children. It is such a blessing to see your own children value life. They see these kids that have everything from cancers to born early to genetic abnormalities to brain injuries, and they view them as they should be, and that's that they're an individual created with a purpose and worthy of our attention and time and care. And so, you know, we really are hoping to see a great change, and I'm so grateful that, you know, for this interview, because it's, to me, education is key, and it's really about getting out there and telling people what's going on and, you know, exposing the darkness, so to speak. And so, you know, that is something that is a great desire of mine. It is something that, you know, I'm just out on the streets all the time. I'm constantly praying, like, Lord, you know, where will you have us go next? And so it's been a blessing. It's been, you know, a trial at times, because we do get these families that reach out to us and asking for help. And, you know, cases don't always go the way that you want. And unfortunately, children are dying. And so that's the reality of this. But there are cases where moms, you know, who are like me and they have children with whatever, you know, is going on, and they're loud and they're being heard. And so, you know, that is, that's just an amazing movement that's coming over our nation. And so, you know, we just really want people to hear this, to be educated, and to know that, you know, our fundamental parental rights are under attack. They're really being stripped from us, and we can't afford to lose that, because, you know, why have children, so to speak, if somebody else is going to tell you whether they live or die or what to do with them? And so, as people, as individuals, you know, people think, well, how can I make a difference? What can I do? You know, we're given the ability to vote in this great nation, you know, and so we need to be checking out the people who represent us. We need to be vetting them. We need to be asking them the tough questions that, you know, things that we hold near and dear to ourselves about, you know, morals and values, and really get down to the nitty gritty and find out, you know, does this person believe what I believe? Are they going to represent me and my child the way that, you know, that it should be? And so that's a really great starter ground. You know, and if you have children and you feel that something is not right, they're being ignored, or cast away. You know, God gives us that intuition as parents, and, you know, hone in on that and don't be afraid to speak your mind. Stand up for what you believe in. There are people out there to support us, whether you have something like autism spectrum or, you know, something as great as, you know, a genetic abnormality or traumatic injury. So there's groups out there. You just have to, you know, really apply yourself and start looking. You know, people punch it in the internet, you know, search engine. But we're out there, and there's something for everybody to do. And so I'm just really glad that I've been able to speak on many different platforms. I hope to do more. And so, yeah.
Thank you for that beautiful story, and I want to help all I can.
Pardon?
I said thank you for that beautiful story, and I want to help all I can.
Yeah. Did I do okay?